All right, guys, welcome to the Dominion Women's Health Podcast, or DWH Podcast. This is episode number 32-443. Don't know what that meant, but
it's pretty special.
So I'm honored today to have Melissa with me on this podcast.
Yes, thank you. Such a pleasure to be here.
Couldn't find anybody else.
Yeah, I'm the default.
So we're trying to figure out some topics to talk about. And coming up soon on some of our other topics, we're going to be talking about vaginal atrophy, treatments of vaginal atrophy. We're going to talk about urinary incontinence, the different types of incontinence that occur with urinary incontinence. And then from there, we're going to go to a topic that I've spoken about multiple times probably on this podcast, is the treatment of uterine fibroids. We're going to talk about medical management, surgical management, and a procedure that I've been doing now for a couple years, which is pretty amazing. It's called ACESA, which is a radio frequency ablative thermal of the fibroids themselves. And just talk about like intraoperative, postoperative management of these patients and go from there. So that'll be coming up soon on our podcast. So today, Melissa and I were talking last week, and I was blowing one of my usual gaskets in regards to healthcare in the United States as compared to other places in the world. And as much as I bitch and moan about healthcare in this country, it's still the best healthcare system in the world, in my opinion. It's just too many cooks in the kitchen and too many people's hands in the pot. So, and I was watching, you're going to laugh at me. I was watching 90 Day Fiance and what was the other one that I said?
I've never even heard of it.
Love is Blind.
Oh, yeah.
So I tend to, when I go home in the evening, my wife laughs at me. I tend to try to watch mindless, brainless shows. Like, I've even seen the guys that are the alligator guys, Wicked Tuna. I mean, I could name every single show on TLC, and I even get into also the Hallmark, because it always ends with a kiss. So, but getting back on point, Love is Blind was a good episode.
I believe it. I know it's one of your faves.
But getting back to the point, the part that was driving me, and excuse my language, fucking nuts, and I don't think anyone in this country realizes it until you start paying attention to it. Did you notice that there doesn't go one commercial in this country that doesn't have an ad for a pharmaceutical industry
drug?
It is sick.
It is. And I feel like it's definitely gotten worse since COVID even, too. So, I mean, it was bad before, but even now, yeah, it's worse.
So Melissa and I were just looking into it, and some of the data that Melissa found for me, I mean, I knew it was really, really bad. I didn't know it's this bad. I know, because, I mean, I've been in practice almost 21 years, and I know that when I was in med school, the pharmaceutical industry had all these drug reps, and they would come in and do teaching sessions with the students and the residents and go over the pharmacology of the drug and the risk and benefits. And I've noticed that, like, over the past 20, 21 years, we're seeing less and less drug reps, and we're getting literature sent in the mail or order, like, samples. But what we've noticed in the past 21 years is the amount of advertising.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So, and I saw, like, Melissa pulled up this one thing for me, that since 1996, the direct-to-consumer advertising budget for prescription drugs has increased from $1.3 billion, and I mean billion dollars, to $6 billion. And one of the latest things that we saw is that it was over $8 billion. Mm-hmm. So, that's, and it's direct-to-consumer. And then there was the one study that I saw that you had sent me that said that, was it in France they looked at it, that a lot of these direct-to-consumer advertising, the studies have shown that those drugs are no more better than the generic drug, its competitor.
Correct.
So what I find from a personal standpoint, and this is my personal opinion, so I'm not coming, well, I am coming after the way it's corrupt, but if you can't convince a doctor to prescribe a drug for a patient, so why don't we go direct to the consumer and keep flashing these stupid commercials about your poop or, I mean, I can sit here and recite the songs from some of these commercials. And what happens to us as a provider is these patients come into the office and they go, oh, can you write me for this drug? And I go, your insurance doesn't cover it. Well, can you try it? So then what happens? We send the prescription, but we talk about the risk and benefit. Then it doesn't get approved. Then it goes for prior authorization. So I wonder, what do you think, like, our healthcare dollars, how much is being wasted on this stuff?
Well, but that's even, I mean, that's the crazy part of it, is that you look at it just from even an advertising aspect, but then what patients don't realize is on our side and the time it takes for us to do the things that we need to do for the prior authorizations and you talking to them about alternatives and then trying to find options for them. Meanwhile, you know, the whole goal is just for them to be healthy and solve whatever condition it is that you're trying to achieve. But, you know, the healthcare dollars spent is outrageous. And obviously the brand names are so much more expensive than just the generics that are out there and have the same efficacy. So it's super frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this is what's happening to a lot of the providers in this country right now, is this whole craze with weight loss, which I think is amazing that we're finally focusing on weight loss. Hopefully next will be mental health. But these drug companies have jumped on this bandwagon and thrown out all these commercials for like Ozempic, Wegovy, Saxenda, Trulicity. I mean, they're all in the same category, but don't we want to know what the side effects of these drugs are, what they could potentially do to you long term? What do these drugs do to you when you come off of the medicine? And it's not to say that I don't prescribe these medications. I prescribe them every day. But when I have a patient that comes in and says, I want you to prescribe Ozempic for me, I go, are you a diabetic? They go, no, I just want to lose weight. Well, that's not what it was originally FDA approved for.
But TikTok says, if you go on TikTok, I'm sure you can find 1,000 patients that are using it for all kinds of purposes.
It's fucking nuts.
It is.
I mean, you sit there and you say, well, wait a second. Have you thought about, let's go through your diet. Let's go through what you're eating, the amount of exercise. So we end up spending a lot of time, which it's great for our patients because we educate them in regards to, before we jump on the medical side of it, let's look into what you're doing on a daily basis. And it's amazing how, like, we've got patients in our practice that are losing 5 to 7 pounds a month just with diet and exercise. And yes, we can put them on these medications if they fail that. But I think it's this, and I don't think it's just the people with the weight loss. I think it's us as a society.
I agree.
These commercials have given us this mental illness that we think there's a magic pill that will solve everything. I mean, I have one of my friends who's one of my cigar buddies who, that's every time we talk about stuff, he goes, is there a pill for that? I'm like, no. But,
well, there probably is, actually.
There probably is. But we go on these golf trips and cigar trips. And if you look in his bag, I mean, he could carry a satchel with drugs in it. He's got like 16 different vitamins. Oh, this one does this. This one does this. Oh, my doctor prescribed this for me for this. And I go, you know, if we would just pick up the pace and just eat less, exercise more.
Have more greens. But we'll probably solve the problem.
But it's crazy. And I think that the thing that frustrates me so much is the politics behind this. We need to call people out for what they're doing. I think that there's a lot of people out there that are just full of shit when it comes to prescription drugs and pharmaceutical costs. We need to look at the big picture. Why are we the only country other than New Zealand that allows advertising of medication and drugs?
Direct to consumer, yes.
Direct to consumer. Why? I mean, I've been to third world countries. I've been everywhere. You're not allowed to advertise in magazines. You're not allowed to advertise on billboards. You're not allowed to do any advertising on TV or radio. But other than New Zealand, we're the only country that allows that. Think about it. Why haven't we passed a bill in this country to ban that? and we could take those $8 billion and put it back into the cost of the pharmaceutical products, the
for research, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's sort of frustrating where you get these politicians, and I'm not trying to pick sides here, but you get these politicians that stand up on the podium and go, we need to bring down the cost of pharmaceutical goods. The prescription prices are outrageous. Well, you were watching TV and you saw a Viagra commercial. Like, if your penis isn't working, I think you've already been to the doctor to try to figure out why it's not working. I mean, come on, give me a break. If we can just cut down on the cost of pharmaceutical, any pharmaceutical prescription, I mean, that's $8 billion plus right there.
Absolutely.
Don't you agree?
Absolutely, 100%. And on top of it, I mean, there's going to be some tax breaks that the big pharma gets too for doing it. So it's kind of a tricky little situation because they're getting rewarded for it too.
Yeah, and I didn't realize when you had told me that the pharmaceutical industry gets a major tax break.
Yeah.
With advertising.
True. True story.
Well, I think one of the big things, and maybe people can respond on our podcast and on our website, is I wonder what the pharmaceutical lobby is, the lobbyist, how big they are. Because to have it only two countries in the world that are only allowed, that are allowed to advertise.
Right, directly, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's truly ridiculous. And a lot of this, like if I hear another commercial for psoriasis.
Yeah, right.
Or eczema.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, don't you think the dermatologists know how to manage this?
You would think.
I mean, I think last night I saw six commercials for psoriasis, one commercial for rheumatoid, four for Viagra. And it depends on what you're watching.
They place them well.
If you're watching Below Deck, it's one thing. If you're watching 90 Day Fiancé, it's another thing. If you're watching Real Housewives, it's definitely a lot of the crazy stuff. So I don't know. It's definitely, definitely frustrating. And I remember, Melissa, when we were looking up this stuff, if you just look at some of the drugs, like the crazy one is Botox alone is over $136 million in advertising.
And sadly, but the funny part about that is that that's the number 10 on the list, not even in the top five.
Well, the great thing about Botox, which I don't have a problem with advertising Botox. Mm-hmm. I think you should advertise Botox every 5 minutes because insurance doesn't cover it.
Exactly. Well, that includes, I think, both cosmetic and also the medical purpose for it.
Oh, well, then just shoot. But, I mean, to sit there and, like, Skyrizi,
yeah.
Ozempic, what is it?
Dupixent.
I mean, how many of these commercials do we have to see? And then I talk to a lot of the rheumatologists and infectious disease doctors that I talk to. They go, dude, patients are coming in saying they have this, and we have to spend an extra 30 to 45 minutes explaining they don't and that we need to take baby steps. So, and how has the pharmaceutical industry made more money by going direct to consumer? Number one, they're having the consumer go to the physician, spending all this time, and then there's going to be providers that just don't want to explain and just write the prescription. But number two, they've gotten rid of a lot of their workforce. They used to have these drug reps that would go around, and these were highly educated people. These are people that with a bachelor's degree that have gone in science or some of them chemistry, and they could come into the office and explain the science behind the drug.
Right.
Well, what they've done is they've cut their workforce, and then they've increased it in advertising.
Right.
So it's like a win-win for them. I think it's almost someone needs to look into it. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Well, hopefully at some point there'll be some legislation passed that will actually do some restrictions on it. But until that time comes, I think we're all going to be subject to advertising every other commercial.
And if you notice, like when we're looking at these commercials, I don't know if you pay attention to it. I would probably say conservatively 75% is directed to male consumer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, would agree.
women's health, again, and I know we talk about it a lot, is on the back burner.
Yeah.
Women's health doesn't get the attention that it deserves. And then when we do give it the attention that it deserves, the insurance companies come in and say, well, we're not going to cover that. It's not covered.
Mm.
And it's amazing. Like, we'll prescribe medication in the practice that we know for a fact will benefit a patient. And they'll say, well, no, we're not covering it. You have to use an alternative. And we'll say, well, we've already tried that. Well, can you document when you tried it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and that's the frustrating part.
And even what's frustrating is that even some of the surgeries, you know, that people have had, that insurance companies need documentation. Well, how come they haven't tried hormone therapy in the past, but yet only limited amounts of hormone therapy are going to be covered? And how come you haven't documented why they didn't try it for 3 months and that they didn't like it? Or, you know, maybe they have other religious beliefs that they don't want to try hormone therapy or whatever the case is. But I just think there's a huge disparity between women's healthcare and just healthcare for the men too.
Yeah. And when we do these authorizations, sometimes it's frustrating. The recent one that I did was I had a lady with a 6 or 7 centimeter mass on her ovary, and she was complaining of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And we were booking her for surgery, and the insurance wouldn't authorize it. They said we hadn't tried a hormonal
Correct.
Method. And I said, it's 7 centimeters. She's in pain. It can torse and she can lose the ovary. And the person on the phone said, well, did you try birth control?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, birth control is not a magic pill. It doesn't get rid of it overnight. It takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like destroying me mentally for not cussing this person out. I ended up having to get a physician on the phone with the insurance company who said, why are we having this conversation? She should have been authorized before. But it's in defense of the people that are denying it. They're just looking at a computer screen.
Right.
No, I mean,
why should it even get to that point is my point. You know, if, I don't know, if you're in pain, if you're going to the doctor, it's not like you're just doing something random. Not like you want to just cut someone open just because you feel like that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, but you know what? It goes back to what someone said to me a long time ago, and I can't even remember anymore because I'm getting old and I'm trying to forget. But they said when God created human beings, they gave 10% common sense and the other 90% to torture the shit out of them. And I sort of believe that.
That's
now.
That's kind of true.
I mean, I had my mentor in med school. I remember what he told me. He goes, you know what's the difference between a phenomenal physician and an okay physician? And I was like, no, what is it? And I was like saying, oh, how much research you did or what. He started laughing at me. He said, no, the phenomenal physician shut up and listened to what his patients were saying. He said, the patient will tell you what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
And that's just the way things are in this world, I guess.
Yeah. But even still, you know, unfortunately, it's not between you and the patient, I feel like. I feel like there's so many other parties involved, you know.
Oh, I know. And I think we talked about it before, too, you and I, is that there's no FDA rules right now in regards to advertising. I mean, I know they go direct to consumer, but if you ever listen to the side effects
mm-hmm.
and put it on, I mean, it is such fine print. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's something that it has to be fair and truthful, and it doesn't matter what the medium is, and it doesn't matter what other message is created. So that's the only requirement that I could find as far as advertising regulations.
But what is fair and truthful now?
And balanced.
I
don't even know what that means.
Is this a CNN or a Fox like news thing? I mean, what is fair and truthful? I mean, there's nothing. Honestly, there's nothing on TV that you can take as fair and truthful. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe in one political view, you watch this channel.
Right.
You believe in this one. And I remember as a kid, when we turn on the news, whether it was CBS, Channel 12, it was all the same news. It was just, who did you like better?
Right.
Like, did you like this guy because of this suit or this woman because she was
Are you a Barbara Walters girl or are you a Ted Koppel?
But they all did the same news.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's... what I wish the news would do is just put out something that's positive. Like, hey, Jim pulled over to the side of the road and helped this couple out. Like, God forbid. We have to hear all this negativity.
Yeah. But then sadly enough, it's going to come out that they arranged the whole thing and they were doing it just so someone would give him money into their GoFundMe page. So, you know, it's sad, but even that's going to have a downside to it.
I tell you what, I need a GoFundMe page. No, you know what's really sad is, and I had spoken to some of my partners, Melissa and the administrator before, is that, did you know that like 25 years ago, 85% of practices were private in this country?
No kidding.
If you went to a physician, it was a private practice. That physician, whether he was an internist or she was a dermatologist or a prime, they were private practices. Now, it's less than 25% are private.
I believe it.
The rest of them are either corporate owned or hospital owned. And it's so, so sad because back in the olden days, and the dental industry still has the market mm-hmm. on this. They did it the right way. But back in the olden days, if you had your town doctor, Dr. Smith, and he was in practice for 30 years, well, he would sell his practice to a younger physician that was coming out of residency to take it over. Well, when these hospitals started buying up practices and corporations, they stopped giving you money for your practice for the number of patients you had. So if you had 20,000 patients and they say, I'll give you $1 a patient, they stopped doing it. They just give you whatever your chair is worth in the office or the computer. So these old doctors, because I was always wondering about it when I was started back in Richmond, is I'd go around the hospital and I'd go, man, this guy is like 75 years old. Why is he still practicing medicine? I mean, at 100 miles an hour. So one day I was having lunch with one of them, and he said, dude, I was spending every dime I had when I was younger in practice because I knew that when I sold my practice, that would be my retirement nest egg.
Right.
Now I have to work to be able to retire. And I'm like, holy cow.
What was the turning point, do you think?
I think it was in like 1998, 99. Hospitals realized that they could control the whole pie. Like in the olden days, you had different pieces of the pie. You had the hospital had a piece of the pie. You had a surgeon a piece of the pie, an internist a piece of the pie. You had the lab a piece of the pie. And what hospitals, and I mean, it's a system mm-hmm. and they're not stupid. They said, okay, well, why should I piss off this doctor who's not going to bring us business to this hospital, he's taking it to this. So why don't we go out and hire our own doctors? And when a patient comes through the emergency room, instead of referring it to the private practices, we'll refer it to ourselves. And I mean, it's a total, you think of it as unethical because you're not giving the patient the best of the best. But if you talk to the hospitals, they go, well, we hire all the best physicians. Well, what have you done to these physicians who have been in practice and refuse to be bought out by you? I have a cousin who's in another state, and they refused initially. But by the end, I mean, when these hospitals start hiring their own doctors and you start getting less and less referrals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's scary. I mean, I'm happy that we lasted 21 years. I hope we last another 20 years. I just don't know what's going to happen in healthcare in this country. Right. I mean, we see it from the prescription drugs and the fraud. I call it fraud in advertising direct to consumer versus educating the consumer. And then the hospitals. I mean, I think instead of just using bullet points in politics and saying we need to do this, let's do a deep dive.
Yeah,
let's figure out who's screwing who over.
Yeah.
I mean,
I feel like it goes so deep, though, that you don't even know where to begin with it.
I know. It's sad. I mean, I have three kids. One of my kids wants to become a physician. And I'm like, I want you to be happy in life. I don't care what you do in life. Just be happy. But she's ecstatic because she comes to the practice during her summer breaks and she falls in love with it. But that's the only way you can go into medicine. I mean, that's why I went into it, is you have to be madly passionate in love with it. other than that, there is nothing good about it. I mean, the reimbursement's dropping, the way that you're treated. I mean, why? I was talking to my nephew who finished residency a couple years ago in psychiatry. I mean, think of it this way. Why would you go to college for 4 years, medical school for 4 years, residency for a minimum of 4 years, and to come out of residency with close to, if you're lucky, $400,000, $450,000 in student loans? No. And then have to deal with all the politics that are behind it.
Right.
And that's what I wish we would focus on. And I'm not just saying the medical system, physicians and nurses and are screwed over. I mean, there's people that get screwed over just as bad as us. You look at, what do you call it, teachers.
I agree.
You look at police officers, firefighters. I mean, are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, but then on the other hand, we'll pay a professional athlete $50 million a year. I mean, yes, they're entertaining, they're amazing, but are we losing perspective on...
Absolutely, on what value is. I agree. But it's going to take a long process, and I think there needs to be a lot of people involved in it. And, you know, I love football as much as the next person does, and it's hard to say, hey, I don't want to watch TV and on Sunday and get together with friends and enjoy, you know,
yeah,
enjoy
I mean,
the sport.
I love sports. But the sad thing is we're almost brainwashed. I mean,
yeah.
If you go to Europe, if you go to the Middle East, if you go to South America, a 15-year-old will tell you everything politically that's going on, how their governments run, who's in what office, whatever. I dare you to take a 15-year-old and ask them who their local state senator is.
Yeah.
But if you ask them who won the World Series last year and what the ERA was, they will recite it like...
Absolutely.
So it's sort of crazy. Well, enough gabbing about this. I want to thank everybody for tuning into this. But seriously, if you're tuning into this, I want you to do your own true research and look at direct-to-consumer advertising by the pharmaceutical industry and how many billions of dollars are spent on direct-to-consumer versus why don't we lower the cost of these prescriptions? So, and it's easy to do is if we pass legislation in this country to prevent advertising like this, we would probably save so much more money on our prescription drugs. So what do you want to do our next podcast on?
I think that talk about maybe some vaginal dryness and vaginal atrophy with Emily.
Oh, sounds really good.
I know. So, it's going to be exciting for everyone.
So let's do that. And I think from that, I want to kick into back to the hormone replacement therapy and the pellet therapy that we do. Because at Dominion Women's Health, we're proud that we're like one of several physician groups that do it. But what we do is we talk about the risks and benefits of hormone therapy and how we can treat it. And it's not just with pellets. We can do creams, we can do pills, we can do patches, but we go through the whole aspect, the risks and benefits, the man-made synthetics versus the man-made bioidenticals. But I think I want to go back to that some more because we're getting a lot of feedback in regards to it. And in our practice, we do consults at our med spa and just go over all the risks and benefits because something that a patient told me this morning and I want to harp on that, but I keep forgetting to mention on our podcast, is she came in and she was complaining of hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, irritability, all this. And she goes, how long is this going to last? Am I going to be done with this in the next year?
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, that's the misconception in this country. Well, in the world, all women believe like, oh, I'm going to go through menopause at around 50, 51, 52. Within a year, I'll be over it. Menopause isn't over. It's a lifelong process. So I try to explain to patients, your hot flashes might go away, but your osteoporosis, your muscle mass, all that stuff is constantly going away. You're going to lose more bone mass. You're going to lose more muscle mass. Your skin is going to get dry. And it's because the hormone's not there. So I want to go through all
of that. I think it's a good idea to go through the lifelong phase of it.
Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And please, someone think of a name for this freaking podcast so we can move on. Maybe these walls can speak or something.
Yeah, I think that's been brought up before.
I know. I thought about it, say hey to the JJ, but it didn't go over well. All right, guys, have a great week and good luck this week. Take care.